And next, someone who's been both an ABC top scientist and a WA Tall Poppy Award winner, Natasha Hurley-Walker. And here she is showing me the universe, or our part of it, the Milky Way, as I've never seen it before. Natasha, where are we sitting at the moment? It looks like a vast area where you show films, but the films are completely different.
So this is the Curtin Hub for Immersive Visualization and E-Research, or the Hive, as we like to call it. And yeah, it consists of different projection equipment.
Over where I'm sitting, I can see a long, long streak in a starry sky. What is the streak?
Well, the streak is our own Milky Way galaxy, but I'm going to have to correct you there, Robin, the phrase a starry sky. This is a fantastic image that we've made with the Murchison Wide Field Array, which is a radio telescope operating here in Western Australia. And it's been operating since 2013. Around the beginning of those operations, we undertook to survey the entire southern sky at these low radio frequencies, which was a little bit of a heroic task, but we were very successful. And so what we're looking at here is a combined mosaic of all of the observations that we took. And we are seeing in radio color. So the red colors here indicate the low radio frequencies, the green sort of in the middle, and the blue, the higher frequencies, although we don't really go that high. All of this is around the FM and digital TV kind of bands, which is why we built the telescope in the remote observatory. So the streak across the middle is our own Milky Way galaxy that we're inside. And so we're looking through it. And so what we're seeing is the accumulated radio emission as we look through the disk of our galaxy.
It's very beautiful. And it's part of your working astronomy, or is it part of a display to excite visitors like me?
I guess both, really. So this image contains a wealth of astrophysical information. So the colours are not just pretty. They are real radio colours. So what you can see in the plane is that we have these areas of red emission, and some of them are shaped like little spheres, little circles. And these are the remains of exploded stars, right? And this is how we tend to identify these supernova remnants. In the radio, a supernova explosion persists for hundreds of thousands of years. So by looking at an image like this, we can rewind the history of our galaxy and look at the births and deaths of stars from even millions of years ago. So one of the new supernova remnants that I discovered in this image exploded about 9,000 years ago and was only visible in the southern hemisphere. So I think that's quite amazing, because the indigenous people here would have had a view of a huge explosion that would have lasted to the light, you know, for the optical light, about a month. And then it would have faded from view, and they would have wondered what that was. And then nearly 10,000 years later, we build an observatory and we see that history and we know what it was. And I just love that connection that we've built going through space and time. It's really fabulous.
Just as a bit of a segue, I've just been to Liverpool in England, and there they've got the Liverpool telescope. And that, of course, was a false piece of information, because when I said there, it's actually on the Canary Islands.
Yes,
in other words, it's a robot. Mm. And it's trained to notice, as you said, something that suddenly happens, because most things up in the sky, as you're observing, take a zillion years, and you don't notice any change. But if the robot is saying, hey, this guy went boing, all look there. And so you're doing it from a different kind of direction rather than the robot spotting it for you. You can spot it by having this lineup of the image writ large.
Yeah, so in some ways this is a sort of reference image. This is how the sky looked to the southern hemisphere in the radio waves in 2013, 2014. One of the really distinguishing features in this image is above and below that streak of our Milky Way galaxy are tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of these little dots. And you think, oh, okay, well, as you said, starry sky. But actually, each one of those is a distant galaxy. And of course, galaxies being large, they change on very slow timescales. And so these brightnesses that we're seeing here, they're not going to change for millions of years. So we've really captured the sky in this image.
And this is the point at which we turn around, and as you indicated in the beginning, a great big other image of something rather more intimate, if you like. And this relates to a paper you wrote, was it 3 years ago?
That's right, yeah. So once we have this reference image, we can, of course, look for things that change, like your robot on the Canaries. We, of course, actually didn't expect to see anything that changed because radio astronomy is a fairly mature science. People have been observing the sky with radio telescopes for almost 100 years now. And at these low frequencies, the prevailing wisdom was that nothing really changes. You see these radio galaxies, they just sit there. You see the Milky Way, it just sits there. You see these supernova remnants, they expand on timescales of tens of thousands of years. It's a fixed firmament, which we ever so slowly move through. And once you've done a radio survey, you're kind of finished. But I had an idea, which I just thought would be a bit of a technical challenge, a bit of fun, where when we were doing our follow-up survey, we needed to take more data in order to go deeper on the sky. So that means we revisit the same patch of sky more than once. And I thought it would just be an interesting technical challenge to just difference the two observations, see if anything changes. If anything does, it should pop out. And what we expected to do is there's this famous diagram in my field, which is just a series of downward pointing arrows, each one representing complete non-detection of transient radio objects. And the goal was maybe we could put a slightly lower downward pointing arrow on this diagram. But we did some differencing, and I worked with a very fantastic honors student, so just undergraduate, Tyrone O'Doherty. And we implemented this project, and oh my goodness, this bright source popped out. Something had changed in the radio sky. Tyrone was really great, wrote up a wonderful thesis, but he moved on to do a PhD with a different group. So it was kind of tasked to me to follow up this funny object and see what on earth had changed. And what was really odd was when I looked at the observations next to the detection of the object, it had disappeared again, which shouldn't happen. Nothing can change this quickly in the radio sky, right? I cannot emphasize enough that this is very, very weird behavior. So I thought, oh, we've made a mistake. It's an artifact. It's a satellite. It's an airplane. It's anything that not real. But an observation 18 minutes later popped up again, same place on the celestial sky. So, you know, when the sun goes overhead, the moon goes overhead, of course, that's the Earth's rotation. And this object was fixed to that sky, wasn't moving like an airplane or a satellite. And then it came back again, and then it came back again, every 18 minutes.
Like, but 18 minutes is not like a pulsar, which is quicker, isn't it?
That's right. So we do know about repeating radio pulsing sources like pulsars. We think, and all of our theories for the last 50 years have told us, that the only way they can generate radio waves is through rapid rotation. And indeed, as we see slow pulsars that rotate once every second or so, they become dim and intermittent and then they disappear. So seeing something that repeated every 18 minutes and each pulse at the time was the brightest radio source in that patch of sky. So outshining these radio galaxies, outshining our Milky Way, incredibly bright. That was a career-defining and life-defining moment. Unbelievable to see this in our data. And of course, we scrambled for explanation. Could this be some kind of signal from one of our own human-made probes? You know, where is Voyager? Nope, Voyager's nowhere nearby. Could this be some sort of hovering helicopter, really just messing with us? No. And eventually we realized, no, this is a real astrophysical signal. So it's actually still an ongoing mystery what these things are, but we have made a lot of progress in it.
So it's not an unusually sized neutron star?
One of the theories is that it could be a type of neutron star called a magnetar. So in a magnetar, it's like very, very, very highly magnetized. And the distortion of the magnetic fields, they could somehow collide to provide enough magnetic energy to drive this bright radio emission. Another theory that we have is that 18 minutes is actually not too unusual for the spin period of a very magnetic white dwarf. So neutron stars and white dwarfs are the different endpoints of different stellar masses. So big stars turn into black holes or neutron stars. Stars like our own sun eventually become white dwarfs. And so we're currently, I think, leaning towards the white dwarf hypothesis. We've had a lot of very interesting evidence come out and that we're about to publish sometime in the next couple of months. Yeah.
You found something and you're not going to tell me because it's embargoed.
Well, I can tell you about my student's very recent paper, which was just accepted to Nature Astronomy, wherein we'd seen that 18-minute repeating source, never saw it again. I've made a plan to find more of these things because there's always more. This is astronomy. You see a star, there's going to be a million more. And I found an object. And this one was repeating every 22 minutes. And what was actually very surprising was we went back through all of the archival telescopes data that had been observing that sky over the last 50 years. And amazingly, we found a detection as far back as 1988. So this source had been sitting there producing pulsations every 22 minutes for over 30 years. And we were the first to find it, which was, I think, very funny. So we had all of this data, and in our first paper, we pointed out the existence of the source. Well, this is astonishing, people. There are sources that are in your archives. You should go and have a look. But my student's paper that we just published, we did this very clever experiment where we observed the object with three different telescopes, Meerkat, very large array in the United States, and ASCAP, which is a telescope we have here in Australia. So we had South Africa, the US, Australia, and we observed the source for 36 hours, handing over each observation. And my student took that data, put it together with all of the historical data, and realized, actually, there is a binary system, and the 22-minute pulsations are modulated by an 8.5-hour orbit, which means this is probably a star and a white dwarf in a very, very particular configuration. And it's amazing because we've done this. This source is 18,000 light years away. And yet just from the radio data, we have these very precise constraints on these two objects. And so we've just had that paper accepted to Nature Astronomy. It's very exciting.
It's very exciting indeed. Now, let's have a thought experiment. If you waited another million years and had another look, would they have crashed together?
That is a fabulous point. So you can lose energy in these orbits by all sorts of different mechanisms. You could have gravitational wave radiation, which of course is a very hot topic at the moment. You could have interactions between the systems and transfer of mass. That's one of the biggest things that slows these things down. The thing is that at the moment, what we can tell, because we can constrain the orbit very precisely, is there is no mass transfer. So neither of the objects are giving mass to the other one. And that means that the system should be very, very stable. We're not entirely sure how long, how these kinds of objects, these white dwarf pulsars, fit into stellar evolution is still a mystery. So we are working on that, and I hope maybe I'll have an answer for you in a couple of years.
Thank you so much, friend. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Associate Professor Natasha Hurley-Walker at Curtin University with another splendid discovery. She is such a star herself, and that imaging facility can also be adapted, would you believe, to show 3D images of shipwrecks filmed way down deep. Some of those images will be displayed at the National Maritime Museum in Sydney later this year, even showing on the sunken deck of the Titanic a blue necklace apparently dropped by a passenger who may or may not have survived.